Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Dark Spectrum. Last week, we read, I turned to leave. Help, please help. I cursed as I looked around. When I couldn't locate the source, I almost did not respond, figuring somebody would go to their aid. I had just gone several steps when I heard it again. He's bleeding. I don't know what to do. Please help. And now, episode 4. I worked my way through the crowd, spotting a woman as she helped a man sit on the building steps. Neither seemed to care they were right below where the bomb had gone off, or that large chunks of debris had fallen on all sides of where they sat. The woman had kicked away a broken brick so the man could sit. Cursing, I closed the distance. A twisted piece of metal jutted out of the man's side. His hands were wrapped around it, trying to keep it from doing any further damage. It was gnarled, and I doubted he could just pull it out. Blood trickled down his side and onto the step. Help! Cried the woman. It was the same voice I had heard before. Even as she spoke, I was already closing in on them. You need to move, I said gruffly, conscious of the risk I was taking by speaking aloud. I gritted my teeth. I wouldn't leave until they were safe. Whatever Peck did to me. The woman looked up. What did you say? I pointed at the roaring flames 10 stories above us. Move. It was hard to distort my voice as I yelled at the top of my lungs to be heard over the crowd. They likely both had phones in their pockets. I shook my head in frustration. The hair on the back of my neck was beginning to stand on end. The drone was still overhead. Was it just my imagination, or was it lower now? I refused to look up. The bad feeling that had been developing in my gut took a turn for the worse. Was one of my former teammates monitoring the drone's video feed? Trying to decide if it was me? I could just make out the scream of sirens. I didn't want to stay any longer, but wasn't willing to let the man and woman risk death from above. I can't move, the wounded man said. My side. He took a breath and licked cracked lips. I can't. I crouched until I was right in his face. I cringed when I thought of how much closer I was to their phones. Staying here is not an option, I said through clenched teeth. Lowering the tone of my voice to the point I was afraid they might not be able to understand me. I will help. Without waiting for a response, I hooked my hands under the armpit of his uninjured side and with the aid of the woman pulled him to his feet. He did not let go of the twisted metal and he groaned when we lifted him off of the ground. I counted the seconds between every slow step while I looked for a place to leave them. It took every last bit of my resolve to avoid looking up at the drone. Either it had made me, or it had not. Continuing to watch would only increase the odds of them identifying me if they had not already. Slow step by slow step, we gained ground and put the danger behind us. The sirens were close now. How much time had passed? It had seemed like an hour, but when I checked my watch, I doubted it had been more than 5 minutes from the time the van had plowed into the sidewalk until now. The sirens drew closer, but with the snarl of traffic in the street, the firefighters and police would be hard-pressed to drive right up to the blast site. A man in the middle of the stopped vehicles waved a flare. He thought he was trying to clear out the traffic, but it looked as though he were having a seizure and was lucky to be on his feet. "Thanks for helping," the woman said between breaths. I noticed for the first time that she was rather attractive. She wore a skirt instead of a pantsuit, unlike many of the other women I'd seen exiting the building. She was also barefoot. Had she been wearing heels and decided to ditch them, or had she taken off her shoes to relax and left without thinking to grab them? I snorted with laughter, but kept it from escaping. The fact we were moving slow enough for me to even think the question was frustrating. The seconds passed as we shuffled our way through the crowd. The wounded man grunted with every step and once or twice cried out in pain. Both hands were still wrapped around the metal shrapnel. The slightest movement caused him the worst pain. My heart went out to the man, and while I did not regret helping him, I couldn't get the sound of the drone out of my mind. It was directly overhead. I couldn't get rid of the nagging feeling it was following me. I wanted to get as far away from it as I could. Judging by the sound from its props, it was lower than it had been before. I refrained from confirming it with my eyes. Either it had found me or it had not. I wasn't going anywhere until these two were safely away. "Did you see Dirk pushing people out of the way?" the woman grunted. "Selfish idiot. If anybody should have been wounded, it should have been him." "Dirtbag," the man said between gasps for breath. I wondered if they were referring to the executive I had seen earlier. I cringed as police cars pulled through the traffic and parked in the street. The traffic was starting to clear in one lane. I looked around, hoping for a bench or somewhere I could leave the couple, but came up with nothing. I ground my teeth and tried to keep from staring as a police officer got out of the car. I had avoided all cops during the last 6 months. Several headed right toward me. The crowd around the building had cleared. A few people trickled out of the doors. A hush fell over the crowd. At first, I thought it was in response to the cops. They were all I could think about, but then I noticed the people nearest us were looking up in the air. As I turned to see what they were looking at, a bunch started yelling at once. "Get out of there! Move! Hurry, hurry, hurry!" But the words of warning were too late. A large chunk of debris slammed into a man who had just exited the building. He hadn't even had a chance to see what hit him. Quiet fell over the crowd. I noticed several people had managed to record it on their phones. One idiot had a sly grin on his face. The sicko probably couldn't wait to post it on the internet. Nobody made a move to help the man who had been crushed. There was no point. He could not have survived. A man right next to me pulled out his phone. I wondered about his motive for recording as I noticed he held it on its side with the microphone pointed right in my direction. I took a deep breath, very conscious of everything I had said. Had I spoken aloud? Had I been one of the people who had shouted a warning to the doomed man? I could not remember. I thought I was in the clear but could not be sure. The woman had seen the death and had paled. The wounded man grunted in pain but had not turned his head. I doubted he could. He had winced at the sound of the crashing debris, but if he had wondered about what had happened, he did not ask a question. His eyes were focused straight ahead as if each step took every bit of effort he could muster. "We were just there," the woman said, gulping down air. "That could have been us." She shook her head and looked right at me. "You saved our lives. Thank you." I made eye contact and nodded, hoping that was expression enough. She seemed to take it as such and did not look to be expecting anything more. We continued on. A cop walked right past me without so much as a second look. His eyes were focused on the fallen debris. He muttered something blasphemous enough to have made Sister Bautista chastise him, regardless of the situation. Sister Bautista. Thinking of her brought back bittersweet memories. I had done my best to not think about her, up until everything had gone down at Blackbrick. She had been a shining beacon for my youth. Her example hadn't made me believe in God, but whenever I needed to make a significant decision, I couldn't help but wonder what she would think of my choice. I'd lost that sense of direction, mainly because I had begun to doubt her. What was her connection to Blackbrick? I had theories, but no evidence. The one I chose to believe, wanted to believe, was that she'd had nothing to do with it, and that in all the confusion after the death of my adoptive father, Beltran had lost track of me for a time. My mood became very dark whenever I considered the possibility that she too had been working for Blackbrick. I'd been able to accept that my adoptive parents had been in Beltran's employ, but it would be another thing to learn she had been as well. Another police officer approached, and I was careful to look at the cop as he passed, acting as one might normally. It was always tricky, doing what I thought a normal person might do. It was difficult. I didn't have much experience in that area. I refrained from letting out a sigh of relief when he disappeared into the crowd, afraid one of the people I was helping might have noticed and been curious why I was nervous around the cops. The next few steps were some of the longest of my life as 6 police cars and a SWAT team vehicle pulled up. Several lanes of traffic were now clear, and they could pull in and keep one lane open. The man who had been hit by the truck was covered in a sheet. The other was gone. I hoped it had been the paramedics who had moved him, and not the fool driver who was looking out for his own interests. Sweat trickled down the side of my face as a swarm of cops passed by me. It was a chilly afternoon, and I was sure that any onlookers would have attributed the perspiration to my physical exertion, not the nerves of a wanted man. "You there," a cop stopped in front of me. I looked him in the eye without hesitation and waited for him to go on, hoping he did not take my silence amiss. For added benefit, I took in a deep breath as if helping the man was very taxing. "Take him that way," he pointed down towards the end of the street. "That is where the ambulances will come. Once you've done that, come back. We're going to need every able-bodied man we have. This looks bad." I nodded my head as he sped by me. We headed in the direction he had pointed to, but we were saved the trouble of having to go the full way because an ambulance pulled up in the free lane. The paramedics took one look at us and came to the man's aid. "Thanks," the woman said as they loaded the injured man, wiping out a sheen of perspiration that had developed on her forehead. "I really appreciate it." She attempted a smile, but only partially succeeded. I gave her a nod and pushed back into the crowd as if I were going to head back to the blast site. Once I was lost to her view, I reversed direction and went the other way. The sense of duty I had felt to help others was not as high now that the authorities had come. The worst of the danger was over. They no longer needed me. "I've done my part," I thought, trying to reassure myself as I turned into the first alley I came to. Three men barred my path. Judging by the size and dress of each of them, I figured they were bodyguards for one of the executives who had been in the building. Behind them, a large Suburban blocked the alley. Were they here for the executive who had pushed his way through the crowd? As this wasn't the time to draw any attention, I spun on my foot and found three other men had come up from behind. I only needed to see the look on the face of the lead man to know they were here for me. "Stupid fool," I thought, realizing the drone had moved to follow me and was hovering overhead. The buzzing echoed off the alley walls. Peck had found me. I thought of every time I had spoken, wishing I had been more careful. It would have been ironic if a phone belonging to the man or the woman I'd most recently helped had been the one to locate me. The men moved fast, and I only had a chance to touch the grip of my pistol inside my messenger bag before I was grabbed from behind. The man in front, he had a bulbous nose, pulled out a gun as I stepped forward and kicked him in the groin. His eyes bulged as I followed it with a punch to his chin, laying him out on the ground. I was jerked from behind and my bag was torn from my shoulder. I brought up my elbow, catching somebody in the neck. I ripped my arms free and thought I might have a chance of escaping. I launched myself at the nearest man who was 6 inches shorter than me. We fell in a heap as hands grabbed me and tore me from him. They pinned me up against the wall. "Peck is lying to you," I said. "I can prove it." The man nearest me smirked, his eyes flashing with amusement. His fist took me on the chin. The drone was lower now. The short man glanced up, but did not look concerned as he turned his attention back to me. I did not regret staying to help. In fact, if I was about to die, the fact I did might bode well on the other side if things were the way Sister Bautista claimed. The bittersweet swell rose in my chest again. She did not work for Beltran, I thought. I wanted to shout it aloud, and almost did. Bulbous Nose picked himself up off the ground. I noticed with satisfaction his nose was bloody, and he was groaning under his breath. Blood ran down his shirt. Unfortunately, it did not look like I had broken his nose. "World's most wanted man indeed," he said, before clubbing me on the back of my head with his pistol.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.